The Sunday Pay-Per-View on Off The Ball.
When he wants to do something, he does it. A hugely impressive person, apart from being obviously a brilliant golfer.
My cousins disliked their dog so intensely that they renamed it Scalacci.
Yeah.
And the dog was called Scalacci from then on.
It's a great piece of journalism. I mean, that sums up what he's like. The intro to this is just brilliant. He is an absolute control freak.
Digesting the best stories on the back pages every Sunday afternoon on Off The Ball.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Looking at that to centre half forward. Good play. Here's O'Neill in his goal scoring position. And he sends it over the bar. A free comes by O'Neill. And away it goes again. 8 points for Stephen O'Neill. Here's a chance for McDonald. He's inside the Tyrone cover. Great save by John Devine. Armagh have it once more. Oshin McConnell. Armagh are back in business.
Puts it in for us, McDonald.
McDonald at the end of it. Gets a shot and it's a goal for Armagh. Incredible. And Armagh have now got the incentive. Here's Paul McGrain going for the equaliser. And there it is. Oh my God, that was close.
13 points to 11 to Armagh was the final score.
Stephen O'Neill scored from a difficult angle at the other side, and here it is from this side. 4 points for Stephen O'Neill. Temper is becoming a little bit frayed. Remember, these are great rivals. Neighbours, every day of their lives. Canavan goes in on McGeaney, and again, it's very sloppy, and things are getting out of control. And there's a lot of shoving and pushing and dragging, and Canavan has lost his jersey, and referee is sending him off.
Oh dear.
A straight red for Peter Canavan. He's hardly on. 60 seconds coming through is Oisin McConville. Brian Doher, not quite fouling. Oisin scores his first point from play. His fourth in this Ulster final replay, and Armagh are now 2 points to the good. The referee blows the full-time whistle, and Armagh are the Ulster football champions.
There's just one word for it. Wow. Tyrone will play Kerry in the All-Ireland Senior Football Final after they defeated Armagh by a single point in their semi-final at Croke Park.
The players give everything they had, and in so many times in the past, this Armagh team, coming to the last 5 minutes, normally would pull away or dig out the result.
We have the healthiest of respect for each other. We certainly are rivals. Why wouldn't you be? Because you're playing against one of the best teams in the country at the minute, and as I said, over the last number of years.
The people who are painting us, you know, I think we're doing it very unfairly, and we shouldn't have to go out every Sunday to prove something. You know, we proved yesterday what good footballers we are. You know, give us the respect we deserve, because we give it to everybody else.
And you're welcome back to Off The Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you 3 to 5 o'clock. 53106, the number for your text messages at Off The Ball on Twitter. We're also streaming now as well. You can watch us on the Off The Ball social channels for Periscope, YouTube and Facebook. We're also streaming on the new OTB Sports app. What you heard there was a montage about the great days we had between Armagh and Tyrone. When you think about intensity, when you think about Ulster football, you're just thinking of the summer. And hopefully now we'll have some of this later in the year. Delighted to be able to go down memory lane over the next hour on the Saturday panel and talk about Armagh and Tyrone, but also current GA matters with two Endas, two great All-Ireland winners, Enda McNulty from Armagh and Enda McGinley from Tyrone. Lads, how are we getting on?
Brilliant. Thank you for having us, John. Really excited about the show.
Yeah, good. Good to be here, John, and always good to relive the memories. It was special times during these games.
Absolutely, lads, totally. And Enda McNulty, the lockdown, how have you been during this whole unprecedented, strange few months? You've been running McNulty Performance. I'll say a lot of Zoom calls, webinars. You've been dealing with sports stars that, like all of us, have been living through a bit of uncertainty. How's that been going?
Well, Off The Ball has been keeping me sane for
a good start.
When I'm out on the bike or when I'm out running or jogging, so that's the first thing. We've been exceptionally busy. A lot of our clients around the world, whether it's in professional sport or global business, we've been very engaged with them, helping them through this crisis, helping them on their leadership, helping them with their well-being, helping them perhaps even stay cohesive as a team or as an organization. So we've probably been three times busier during the last 12 weeks than we have been normally, which has been really, I suppose, humbling, but of course challenging.
And Enda McGinley, you're in the medical profession, physiotherapy, orthopedics. You've been working in a hospital. How's that all been going through COVID? I'd say it's completely unchanged, massive upheaval.
Yeah, massive upheaval is the word that I suppose the whole start of it was trying to get plans in place, and all your normal daily routines were being completely ripped up and completely untried systems were being put in place. Everybody was very much having to adapt on a daily basis, and there was about three different instructions coming down from management each day, and sometimes they were conflicting, but gradually we got a system in place that we were happy with to try to deal with the surge. Thankfully, the public measures meant that the surge never arrived in the numbers that we were fearing at the start, but the hospital still is very much sort of geared up for that. There's worries about a second wave again. Hopefully it doesn't come, but the hospital still hasn't returned to normal as yet. As yeah. You say, I'm orthopedic, so our business, all them surgeries has been stopped, and it's been very strange. You've been contacting patients by phone and virtual clinics and whatnot, but it's not, we're a long way from normal working, and I think the concerns now is that all the normal medical problems that were there are still there, and we sort of need to get back to normal, but COVID hasn't gone away. Particularly our hospital is a COVID hospital, so all the precautions have to stay in place.
Yeah, that's interesting stuff, Enda. And before we get to the memory lane stuff and Armagh and Tyrone and the noughties and that, you both served in the GAA's Medical, Scientific and Welfare Committee for 3 years. How do you view the return to play from a player welfare perspective? We see this announcement yesterday that on Monday week, players will be able to return to contact training. Sport is back, effectively. And that will hopefully, maybe if the GAA can pivot and possibly restructure their calendar a little bit, make the club scene a little bit less congested. Is it something that you welcome? And what's the landscape for you regarding player welfare?
Yeah, the difficulty in making any judgment here is that everybody is literally making this up as we go along. Yeah. There is nothing to compare it with. This hasn't been done before. So all the judgments that are being taken with the very best interests in heart. You can tell from just the narrative out there globally that there is discrepancies between what some scientists are saying and what some governments are saying. So somewhere in that, the GAA has had to plot its own course. I think generally they've handled it very, very well. They've stayed on the conservative side of things. My concern then was whenever they created these windows of opportunity, it was up to the county boards on how to use them. I'd have to say I thought a lot of the proposals from a lot of the counties created massive, massive congestion and an absolute mad rush of fixtures, which if we were still serious about trying to manage or return post-COVID, I don't think that was the way to go about it from a health and safety point of view and placing them sort of demands on clubs. But certainly if things are going that well from a national point of view, that the space can be opened up and maybe by mid-July there's the possibility of games, if that was availed of, I think suddenly the club window could become much more workable for clubs, because as it is, I think it's so difficult from a club point of view, and the club game has been squeezed just to tick it off the list, which I wasn't too impressed with, to be honest. But in general, I have to say, I think the GAA has managed the whole situation very well and can be pretty proud of how the association responded to such strange times.
Like the pandemic, Enda McNulty, say, has possibly been the biggest crisis in our lifetimes. It's a chance to reset. How do you think we should be resetting from a GAA perspective?
I agree with Enda there about how the GAA have handled this, in particular from a charitable point of view. What the GAA has done during this time, I think we can all be very proud of. It's a very difficult time to get everybody back playing. Of course, all players want to get back on the pitch as soon as possible playing games. All supporters want to get out of lockdown and watch their local club or watch their county in competitive games. That's what everybody wants. I think the GAA has been nice and measured. They've been controlled. And of course, they're looking at what's happening around the world at this time. To reset, to answer your question, John, I think there's an opportunity to reset the format of the championship. If we're going to get this championship complete and done in full this year, I think the opportunity is to use this year to reconfigure the championship structure and format, to use this year to experiment. It's probably the biggest opportunity in our lifetime to experiment with the format of the championship, maybe even putting that Champions League format together that we've always spoke about and run it over maybe two or three games per week. So as Enda McGinley mentioned, of course, player safety, fan safety, and backroom staff safety is of the utmost importance. But I think if we learn from what the Premier League are doing, if we learn from the Bundesliga and what they're doing, and even what the NBA are currently planning, there's no reason why the GAA can't get this right. And hopefully other sporting bodies in Ireland can learn from that.
Like, I think it's even the news out of Australia, was it this morning? Conor McKenna, the Throne Man, he's down with COVID and his games has been cancelled. So, like, we are getting back to normal.
He wasn't even showing any symptoms.
Yeah, and that was another worry for me about the GAA approach. We are still an amateur organisation, so there's no screening. The soccer teams, the AFL teams, they're being properly swabbed and screened for COVID virus, and so it's been picked up. You get a positive player like that amongst a GAA club who's playing double fixtures this weekend, double fixtures next weekend, you imagine, and there's underage teams at the same club and everybody's interacting. It is a bit of a potential for disaster. I think the numbers are so low that hopefully the risk is actually very low as well. But there's no point pretending we are back to normal yet. It is still there lurking in the background. I think we need to tread carefully, but certainly it's brilliant the way it's going. The potential for at least some games is brilliant. But I would agree with Enda. I think there's an opportunity there to maybe experiment with formats, because there's nothing to lose this year. We thought several weeks ago that the season was completely gone. Anything now is bonus territory. It would be a pity to just try to squeeze in the old formats and really squeeze them in rather than maybe experimenting with something new.
Are you both new each other? Go on, Enda.
It's pretty exciting in that, you know, you imagine Tyrone playing against Curry in a first round of a championship. There's a different way of running the championship this year that maybe we've never done before. And the other thing is, I think we can learn from the biggest organisations in the world, not only sporting organisations, about how they're coordinating their staff in terms of getting back to work. We can learn from that amazing systematic approach. So pretty exciting times about what this is going to mean, not only for GAA, but all sporting bodies right throughout the country and the world.
Yeah, you both knew each other, didn't you, before you kind of got into Armagh and Tyrone battles in the University of Jordanstown?
Yeah, me and Enda actually played on the same team at Jordanstown. So I had really good memories. I think he boxed the head off me a number of times in training up at UJ. But really good memories playing on that Sigerson winning team. And that was 2001 under Mr. McGuckin, who was a famous, of course, Derry Maharaj coach. A lot of good memories.
Great memories, and we would have both had very different memories of Jimmy McGuinness than the more modern era Jimmy McGuinness. Jimmy was in that team too, but he was in the long-haired days, and there were different times, but absolutely, Adrian McGuckin, they were special times. I think anybody that has worked under Adrian McGuckin would have the best awards for him, and he brought together a pretty special bunch of players. In fairness, it was very, very strong, and of course, that Sigerson was won during Foot and Mouth, so everything was upended at that time too, and the Sigerson weekend couldn't happen because it was all individual fixtures. There was the whole prevention of the foot and mouth crisis too. So the GAA has come through them times before, but certainly nothing quite like COVID. But yes, me and Enda have won a bit in the past together.
And lads, were you inspired by the Northern successes of the early 90s? You got Down 91, Donegal 92, Derry 93, Down 94. Did it feel for you guys, with the troubles also coming to an end, that Ulster counties could play at the top table and win at the top table, as exactly what happened a decade later for you guys?
Yeah, definitely. If you go right back to that amazing Down team, that amazing Derry team, we all learned from those teams. We all looked up to them when you're a young kid, looking at the amazing Down footballers like James McCartan or Mickey Linden or Greg Blaney. Of course you looked at them and went, how can we learn from them? Then you looked at the Donegal team, the Martin McHughes. Of course you're looking at the unbelievable Anthony, the midfielder from Donegal. What was he, McGillaway?
Toholt.
Anthony Malloy from Donegal. Amazing footballers. Declan Bonner. And then you go into the Derry team, the Downies, the Toholts. Like, we all looked up to these guys in terms of how formidable they were. And then go into 94 again, Down won it again. And then Tyrone probably should have won it in 95 with the most amazing display by Peter Canavan. So every one of those years we knew that Ulster had the best teams in the country. And as young men at that stage, we were looking up to them and saying, were we good enough to compete with them someday? Were we good enough to beat them someday? Or were we good enough to walk on their footsteps someday?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, them summers are my first memories properly of sitting in the living room as a family and watching them All Ireland finals. And you were cheering on madly the Ulster teams that were down there. I have to say that changed a wee bit as an adult whenever you were playing against them teams. It was pretty muffled celebrations then. But watching them, I suppose I was never aware of any other concept other than you were a full member of the GAA and every bit as entitled to be at the top table as any other team. I never was aware of any second class citizen or any inferiority complex. And it was clear, even whenever the time I came to start playing for Tyrone myself and you were coming into big games, and say for my father, who was so used to watching Kerry and stuff, Kerry and Dublin, of course, the great teams of the 70s and 80s, the very thought that Tyrone would be taking on them teams, you could tell he really had doubts that whilst Tyrone might have put in a great performance, say, in Ulster, he was always blaming, well, Kerry's different stuff or Dublin's different stuff. But as a young fella, because I'd seen the 90s, you never had any doubt that Ulster football could compete at the very top. And then, of course, I came in along with a group of Tyrone underage players, and we went and won anything that was in front of us. So by the time we came to senior level, both your own experience as a child watching other Ulster teams in Croke Park and your own experience then as an underage player, there was absolutely no doubt in our heads that this was... All-Ireland titles was what you should be expecting to win, and anything else wasn't really allowed for at all.
It's funny you mentioned the underage football there, Enda, because I remember playing in a minor final in Clonus. Armagh were playing in a minor final. I think it was against Down. We won the minor final, but at the end of the game when we won the cup, the senior teams were coming onto the pitch. I think it was Down coming onto the pitch. I don't know who they played against that Ulster final in the senior game, but I remember thinking, I'm like a little boy compared to the size of these huge Down footballers, the Conor Deegans of this world, people like Gregory McCartan, and I couldn't believe the physique of them, the size of them. And I remember going home on the bus that night and the boys saying, you know, we have a lot of work to do to become a senior footballer if we're going to be able to compete against those colossus teams and men. So it's amazing how much you grow in those 3 or 4 year periods after minor football. I know you had an incredible experience under, obviously, Mickey Hart, and but unbelievable, I guess, trajectory from a minor to under 21 to senior at that time.
When I get the sense from McCavan-Monaghan rivalry guys, it really feels intense. Was it a case that Armagh and Tyrone's counties didn't really have that real bite and intensity until it got to the stage where you were fighting it out for All-Ireland finals and semi-finals?
Let McGinley take that one first, and buddy.
Yeah, as a Tyrone man, our geographical position means that we're surrounded by counties that don't like us very much. And that's nothing to do with how we are as Tyrone people. But no, it's in Ulster, it's all about who's at the top and who is your main competitor. Like for a couple of years down in Derry, because they were the ones that were going for that All-Ireland title, they would have been massive rivals. Tyrone then came in a wee bit later to that. Tyrone and Donegal are huge rivals at the minute. Tyrone and Armagh obviously went through the spell, Armagh and Down. So you've got the neighbourly thing, which will always ensure rivals. For Tyrone, geographically, that means pretty much everybody's a rival. And then you've got who's on top at that time, or who's on your level, who are you competing with at that time, and they very quickly, just because you play them on a regular basis, they suddenly become pretty strong rivals. But I think that only adds to it all. Going back to that 90 spell, that was back when Ulster was straight knockout, and you had All-Ireland winners in three different counties, and Tyrone with our chip on their shoulder always believing that we should be mixing it with them too. So it made for a very, very potent Ulster Championship. And them rivalries are always simmering in the background. And then as a couple of teams maybe get a wee bit of a wind, for example, Tyrone and Donegal at the minute, big rivals, but certainly the noughties was all about Tyrone and Armagh.
We're chatting to Enda McNulty and Enda McGinley on the Saturday panel. Do you have any questions for the lads about those great battles between Armagh and Tyrone or any other GA matter? 53106 is our text number at Off the Ball on Twitter. We've got about 2 minutes left on this segment before the ads. Just Enda McNulty, you did beat Tyrone a couple of times before it all got very heated in 03 and 05. In 02, for example, on your run to the All-Ireland, you beat them in Ulster.
Yeah, well, my first game as a senior footballer in the Championship was against Tyrone in 97. Over in Oma, so a lot of great tussles along the way. We won some of those, we lost some of those. The one in 02 was an intense battle right from the get-go. I remember Cormac McAnallan very vividly, God rest him, and the intensity of the battles in the first few minutes of that game in the 02 first round, in the first game in 02. Obviously went to a replay, went to draw and then went to a replay. There was nothing in it between the both teams. I think we got a goal in the last minute of the game to win it in the replay. So basically, you had two very even teams, very evenly matched both extremely well conditioned, both very well coached, two professional group of players, two very strong benches. So the players that Tyrone could take from the bench were really strong, and our bench was also very strong. So we were lucky, you would say, maybe to win it in that game in 0-2. And then obviously the rivalry continued on very strongly for about a 6 or 7 year period. My memories of that rivalry would be Peter Canavan. My job was nice and easy, so I was always given the job to mark Peter Canavan. So I wasn't really bought into the huge the media and the fan build-up to those games and the intensity and the razzmatazz. To be honest with you, I was focused in on Canavan. That was my only job. I was really laser-like in how the hell I was going to deal with this, probably one of the greatest players of a generation.
And so we
kept really zoned in on that. I didn't let all the noise infect me.
We got to just take a break. Sorry, Enda. We'll come back to Peter Canavan, 03, 05, the trilogy and all of that with Enda McNulty and Enda McGinley. You just have to take a break right now. Sorry about that. 53106 for your text. At Off The Ball on Twitter back after this.
This is OTB Sports Radio, Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
I was talking to somebody about Messi and hasn't won a major. Then Ronaldo might. Does that make him a better player? Well, Messi hasn't an opportunity to play in the majors, but they're both great players.
The best analysis of all the week's football from Ireland's number one football man.
PSG, I thought professionally, were dreadful. Liverpool had that. Liverpool had an honesty about them that PSG didn't have and deserved to win it. It would have been a disgrace, I think, had they not won that particular game.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app.
You are welcome back to Off The Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 5 o'clock. 53106 for your text messages at Off The Ball on Twitter. You can also watch us as well on the social channels on Periscope, YouTube, on Facebook. You can also watch us. We're being streamed live as well now on the OTB Sports app. Talking about the Armagh-Tyrone rivalry and current GA matters with Enda McGinley from Tyrone and Enda McNulty from Armagh. Sorry to interrupt you, Enda McNulty, just before the break there. We had to just take an ad. Guys, 2003 was a pretty momentous day for Ulster football. A first ever All-Ireland, All-Ulster final. And what kind of stands out from the day itself, if you were kind of to give us a synopsis of what happened on the day for you guys? 12-9 for Tyrone. Sorry, Enda McNulty, I know it was a disappointing day, but Dermot Morrison sent off, Peter Canavan had a great game, and just not much in it in the end.
Yeah, what stands out for me was actually before the game, I think we had went to the Hill 16, and Tyrone also came out after us and went to Hill 16. And I remember very vividly, Jared Calvin hitting me a shoulder, knocking me back on my back under the ground, and my head hitting the ground. And I remember that we'd been programmed to be so disciplined before the game that I got up nice and, let's say, in a disciplined manner, and I ran up the other end of the pitch with the rest of the Armagh team towards the Canal End side. So that's my first memory of the pitch that day. We had been programmed to be extra vigilant on our discipline, to be extra vigilant in terms of our composure, because a lot of the media on the build-up to that game had said that we were so aggressive, we were so intensive that somebody's going to end up very badly injured. So I remember that some of our messaging internally in camp would be to tone back our aggression, to tone back our physicality and our intensity. And I think in hindsight, that was a mistake. I remember that very vividly. We weren't nearly as aggressive as we had been for the previous 3 or 4 years. So certainly that was a mistake. Overall, very positive memories of all those encounters with Tyrone. The stadium in Croke Park was literally rattling before the game. The Tyrone fans were going crazy. The Armagh fans were going crazy. And I remember walking in the parade before the match and looking at these guys alongside us, who we had huge respect for, of course, but we knew we were going into a colossal battle with.
Yeah, they were just some of the most surreal times in your life. Like, we were looking back, the vast majority of that Tyrone team, certainly all of the ones that came through with me, were about 22 at that age. Like, and at that stage, it felt normal to be there. Yes, it obviously felt very special, but it didn't feel completely mad that you're there as a 22-year-old. Now, many years later in life, looking back and looking at other 22-year-olds now and thinking, my gosh, that was the age we were whenever we were taken to that field under that sort of pressure. But well, Ireland finals are strange. If you were to go in completely cold with no sort of preparation for it, the occasion would just bowl you over. The noise is such that you can literally feel the weight of the crowd or the expectation or the pressure. It's a very surreal feeling out there. But because you've come through lots of big games up to it, and you've been playing in front of 30 and 40,000 and 50,000 and 60,000, then suddenly it doesn't make that big of a difference. I remember Paddy Talley, who was our coach at the time, he came to me personally, and he just, obviously he was one of the younger ones, and he just says, look, when you go out on the pitch, take 2-3 minutes in the middle of the warm-up, just take 2-3 minutes and just stop and look right around the pitch. Think of where your family would be. Look at the size of the crowd. Look at the magnificence of the All-Ireland final day. And then just narrow it down, bring it right in. Realise that there's goalposts either side of the pitch, white lines around the pitch, and just hone in that it's just another game of football. Of course it's not, but that was massively effective for me in the day. And I remember going around the parade and thoroughly enjoying it. It was an amazing thing. And again, Tyrone, it's the naivety of youth again, but we seen ourselves as a much younger team than Armagh. Armagh probably had maybe 3-4 more years on under their belt than we had, so we felt we were this up and coming and had that sort of energy and life about us, and we were looking forward to getting a crack at Armagh, obviously sitting with the All-Ireland title. The pressure was probably more on them. They had won their All-Ireland title. We felt we were the up and coming team, and that sort of momentum was with us.
What was the winning and the losing of the game, lads, that day in 03?
What was that? Sorry, I said again, John.
The winning and the losing of the game in 03?
Winning and the losing of the game was, for as I said, intensity-wise, I think we dipped our intensity a little bit. We were almost too disciplined. That was one thing. Secondly, I would look at myself. I always like to take responsibility yourself before you point the finger at anybody else in your team or in your backroom staff. I was marking Peter Canavan that day. Peter was not fit to play that day. You might remember he had a very bad ankle injury in the run-up, so he wasn't fit to play, and yet I shepherded him for a good chunk of the game when really I should have taken maybe Stevie O'Neill, who was more prolific from play that day. So the win and losing the game for me was, tactically, we got it slightly wrong. We weren't as physically as intensive as we were before, and to be honest, I think we slightly overtrained. The few weeks in the build-up, I remember going to a training camp for 3 days, with about 8 of the Armagh players, John McCluskey and Joe Kiernan, arranged for us to go on a special training camp. About 8 or 10 of us took 3 days off work. And to be honest with you, I thought we were overly trained. So our intensity and our physicality was probably 30-40% what it had been in previous games.
Yeah, for me, to be absolutely honest, I think Tyrone outplayed Armagh quite a bit that day. We missed 3 really, really clear goal chances, and I felt we were definitely a better team. But as Armagh proved over the years, they just could not be put away. And even right at the end, then of course you had Conor Gormley's block to stop Stevie McDonald getting the shot away. So Tyrone, for me, we played better that day. I thought we brought a better energy. It was very interesting hearing Enda saying that they stepped down the physicality, because in our heads, much had been made of that Armagh physicality, of Armagh's superior strength against our younger team. And Mickey's famous thing in the night before in the team hotel, he passed around a bag of sugar to show that was the average difference in terms of weight over the team, and sort of very much saying, look, it's absolutely nothing. But we were geared up to take on this physical Armagh team, plus we had our own energy, that youthful sort of energy and speed that we'd seen, that you'd sort of seen against Kerry, that sort of manic work rate. So we probably had that balance a wee bit better, and I think if we had have taken our chances, the game would have been probably our biggest victory over Armagh. But Armagh proved what they're about. They just could not be shook off, and each of them, even if they were a wee bit in the back foot, they stayed in it and stayed in it, and it meant that it did come down to the death. But from a Tyrone point of view, and within that Tyrone camp, we felt destined to win that day, and there was no real doubt in our mind at all that we were going to finish the job.
53106 on text. Enda McGinley was a great sport and was part of the campaign recently called Change of Heart, where he wore a rival jersey to raise money for Heart Children Ireland Blue Ribbon Fund. Give him a huge credit from all of Maher Clune and our little girl Millie Byrne in Maher Clune, who's waiting on a heart transplant. And hi, John, can you ask both Endas for their insights into Mickey Hart and Joe Kiernan as managers? That is from Mike.
Yeah, where do you start in them two men? I suppose in terms of Mickey, that's the man I know. He first managed me whenever I was 10 years old in an under-14 campaign for my club, Errigal. We won a league title that year, and we ended up winning an awful lot since. Another good example that gives Mickey's mindset, as a 16-year-old there, I was a fifth year in St. Kieran's, and Mickey was a teacher there. I'd got awarded a Spur of in a Skilling bursary, one of the peace bursaries that you got up here, and it give you a three-week paid trip to Cyprus with other students from the north. And that was to be occurring in around sort of June time. I spoke to Mickey. Now, this was way back in January. I was awarded this. I spoke to Mickey then in the school and said, Mickey, look, I have this here coming up. I'm sort of hopeful that I know that you're thinking I might be involved in the minors. What's your thoughts? And that at that stage, I just made the minor panel. His thing was that, well, look, June, July time is also final time for minors. We will be there. So, he didn't think I should go on it. So 6 months out ahead of a minor championship, where minor obviously completely unpredictable, there he was advising me to forgo the 3 weeks trip to Cyprus and just stay at home and play ball. And we obviously won that minor Ulster title and went on to win the All-Ireland. His mindset is complete confidence that his teams will compete and will win. Seen it at the club, seen it at the county. He is very, very single-minded in approach. There is no suffering of fools. He expects everybody to be that way inclined. He's not a lovey-dovey manager. He's not an arm around the shoulder and tell you you're great. Either you're measuring up to the standards he's wanting you to be at, which are high, or then just exit stage left, please. But he is so driven and so confident in his own mind that he essentially planted the seeds of success within us, and we were bulletproof on the biggest days. We were bulletproof. Like, I can't remember losing a final under Mickey Hart. He was absolutely remarkable in that regard. On the big day, his preparation was second to none.
I think in terms of, you mentioned there in the big days, what you guys did in terms of winning some of those obviously big finals. One thing I think that's slightly underestimated about Mickey is his tactical awareness, his tactical acumen. And if I flip that across into comparing him with Joe Kiernan and speaking about Joe, obviously very admirably, I would say that when Joe came in from Cross McGlen, we had huge belief in the man because of what he'd done with Cross McGlen, turning them into the best club team in the country that time, arguably of all time. He created a great professional approach in the Armagh squad. He built on what Brian McElinden and Brian Candleman had built in the previous 5 or 6 years. He brought us off to La Manga in training camps that was as professional as some of the training camps have been on in recent times with Ireland rugby or even with some Premier League teams. In his backroom staff, he would have brought in serious heavyweight guys like Hugh Campbell and Des Jennings in terms of the psychological preparation. He actually brought David Aldred in, who famously worked with Johnny Wilkinson to help us with our kicking technique. Enda McGinley would laugh and say that obviously didn't work too well with Enda McNulty. But he certainly had brought in a lot of professionalism there. I think tactically Joe had raised the bar on the game in that period between obviously 02 to about 05 or 06. I would argue in hindsight we could have went to the next level. I think we could have evolved much faster and we could have really watched more tape from, let's say, a Phil Jackson and Chicago Bulls point of view and realised how we could have brought the game to the next level. But Joe Kiernan, without question, is one of the game changers in Gaelic games. I have huge admiration for him. I also have huge admiration for Mickey Hart. I was lucky enough to play it under Mickey Hart in an All-Stars team out in Hong Kong. Mickey was the coach of that team that I played on out there. I have huge admiration for the man as a person, as a coach, and of course as a game changer in Gaelic games.
Okay. Something I suppose overlooked with Mickey, that Tyrone squad was a fairly different type of bunch in that there was some guys who were absolutely the life and soul of the party. The likes of the Hub Hughes and Owen Mulligan, obviously, and Brian McGuigan, people like that there, they were the life and soul of the party. And Mickey, obviously a pioneer and everything else, wouldn't really understand or be for that side of it at all. There was plenty of other boys who were very straight-laced on it, but he was able to give enough and leave enough scope and be understanding enough of the boys that were the life and soul of the party to keep the whole thing together. And I think that ability to cope with 30 different young fellas, 30 different personalities, and maintain a lightness of touch, for me, one of the traits, and this might be a biased point of view, but I thought Tyrone during them years were slightly less serious and uptight than Armagh. I think Armagh at times got a very uptight. I remember one award ceremony, I think it might have been 05, before that famous Solheron semi-final, and the Tyrone boys were there, and they were there socialising. They weren't drinking, but they stayed the night and chatted to everybody. The Armagh contingent came in as a group, sat down, spoke to nobody. As soon as the rewards were up, were over, they got up and left. And there was an uptightness there that I think our team was that wee bit younger, and the personalities involved in Mickey's management of it, we made sure that that was our personality, that we weren't taking it too serious. And I think that stood to us on some of the bigger occasions as well.
I think that's interesting when you talk about the psychological preparation for those games. You know, it's so easy to go a little bit too intense, a little bit too focused, and it can impact your optimal functioning, I guess, on a big day. I would have to say that some of the Armagh fans will follow me for life if I don't mention Jamer getting sent off in that 0-3 final for something that definitely was not a sending off incident. Now, was it the reason we lost the match? It wasn't the reason we lost the match, of course. But Jamer would hit me a box over the head if I don't allude to that. All the Armagh fans for the rest of my life will never forgive me if I don't allude to that. We look at all the other factors. It was multifactorial, but that certainly was a factor that impacted the game.
And the trilogy as well. Like, with all these things, hindsight's great. If it goes one way, it goes the other way. Everybody is a winner and a loser. And sometimes there can be grey areas. Because when I look back at that trilogy, the first game is a draw. The second game, Tyrone probably the better team. The second game, Peter Canavan gets sent off within a minute. The shirt pulled off his back. Armagh rally to win. Then the third game, the semi-final, Armagh probably the better team. But then Kieran McGeaney is substituted. Maybe might not have been the best decision ever. But that can happen. And then he's like Ronaldo on the sideline without the injury. And then Tyrone with Canavan and managed to just squeeze past Armagh. It could go either way. They were great matches, guys. Your memories of those three games in 05?
Amazing. Well, McGeaney, you mentioned McGeaney there. It'd be remiss of me not to mention McGeaney. What a colossal player. What a colossal captain. And during all those games, he was formidable in terms of his resilience and his steeliness in all those big games at Croke Park. My memories of that row that happened when Canavan was sent off, that was surreal. Because Peter was only on the bloody pitch, and next thing, 60 seconds later, I seen him being sent off with a red card with the jersey dragged over the top of one of the players' heads. So it was surreal to see what happened that day. We should definitely not have won the second game. I remember laughing and giggling as we went up the steps to win the cup, and we were all laughing at each other. How did we win that replay? We'll never know. I think Tyrone had an advantage that time not winning the replay, because obviously the one you want to win is the semi-final. The semi-final, it's almost a flip of the 0-3 game. Armagh played better. Armagh performed better. And in the last 3-4 minutes, obviously Tyrone come back just to squeak a win. Colossal battles, brilliant memories for life, and I suppose great life lessons.
Yeah, it was just the tension, I'm sure. And I would agree that the sheer tension of them games was savage. And it was such that you felt sorry for the supporters. Like, the supporters went through it every bit as much as the players. It was probably the only time I would have said that over my career. The tension among the supporters, not a hatred of each other, but just the sheer tension. That seen these games so many times, there was nothing between the teams at this stage, particularly 05 and 03. I definitely felt Tyrone were the better team in 03, but 05, Armagh seemed to have closed the gap. I'd agree with your summation. The two Ulster finals, Tyrone had got into good leads and failed to close it out. But whenever we were playing our top football, for us it was clear that we could play football at a higher level. But we failed to put Armagh away. And then the two sentences off, Armagh won the Ulster final. And in the semi-final, it was the flip. Again, we came in probably confident we could outplay Armagh. And to be fair, Armagh played superbly well. We're definitely the better team over that day. But that time then, we had to dig in. and make life difficult for Armagh and try to put us in a position that if we got a chance we could go on and win it at the end, which we did. But again, the tension, the your family members, there was no neutrals at them games, but the Throne and Armagh supporters left them games as drained as exhausted as the players did, and there was as much nervous tension in them before the game as there was in the players. But them games, they didn't get great press at the time. But looking back,
was the football good, lad? Was the football good?
To be honest, it sort of stands up well compared to maybe more modern fare. It was kamikaze. It wasn't very controlled or contrived the way maybe the modern game has went. So it still looks good. You had stunning, talented players playing at the very top of the game. Speaking of the likes of Stevie McDonald, Arshin McConville, Stevie O'Neill, Brian McGuigan, like them players, some of the things they done in them games was immense. But it was the sheer physicality, the aggression by both teams, neither team giving an inch. So there was, whilst it mightn't have been for the purest, although I would say it still is massively entertaining when you look back at them, you can't deny the quality coming from the fact that you had two teams at the very top of their game going at each other as their life depended on it. And I don't think you can ask for more than that from a GA point of view.
I think the football was great, John. I would agree with Enda on that one there. If you think about some of the players in that pitch, and Enda listed a number of them, I would say some of those players arguably were as good as any player in the last 50 years. Think about the Canavans, the McGeanies, the McGreans, the Morrisons, the Mulligans, the Doohers, the McAnallan, God rest them. So some of those footballers were arguably would get in any team in Ulster in the last 50 years, and maybe even any team in an Ireland series in the last 50 years. Some of them certainly like the Canavans and the McGeanies and so on. But what I do also think is the intelligence of the players, the ability for some of those players to coordinate the offence or the defence. So some of the things that happened during those years shaped that defensive system that still is obviously very formidable in today's game. So a lot of the things that happened in those games, I think, shaped the tactical evolution and really accelerated that. Did it make the game better or worse? Your listeners today can argue whether it made it better or worse, but it certainly shifted the game in terms of the tactical evolution.
We got a potential knockout championship this year, guys, between October and December. When I'm looking at Tyrone, they had a strong year last year. Could be Mickey Hart's last year, we don't know. Armagh, Jarlath O'Byrne, Rian O'Neill, some good young players coming through. How do you feel like your chances are set for Ulster, lads? And do you have a chance, lads, with a knockout championship of beating the Dubs?
Well, I think the team's done a good job in the last 5 years, I have to say, with Armagh. A lot of those good young players, you mentioned Jarlath, of course, we're talking about Jamie Clark. Very strong team. I love the way Kieran McGinney also has some of the ex-players, the John Tolles, who I never mentioned earlier on, Paddy McGeever in the backroom staff. So they're a very strong bunch of players, and they have a very strong squad. So it's exciting times in Armagh at the moment. I know with Kieran's mentality that even in the lockdown, he would have used every single day to make the players physically, mentally, technically and tactically stronger. So it's exciting times. I think Armagh is a stock, to use the stock phraseology, or the, let's say, the Wall Street phraseology. Armagh is certainly a stock on the way up. I don't know enough about Tyrone, but I know that Armagh is certainly a stock on the way up.
Yeah, in terms of Armagh, I'd agree that their talent in their forward line is immense. It's probably the best there is in Ulster, to be honest. Ironically, the team has failed to become that McGeaney-esque thing of being so solid and so steady. They are explosively good, and then they are slipshod at times and they end up losing games that they shouldn't be. But they're a team very much on the up, and they could do something from a Throne point of view. The COVID thing, to be honest, has been a real blessing. Throne were struggling during the National League with no Matty Donnelly, who had the major hamstring injury, with no Callum McShane, who was obviously with the Australia thing, and then came back and then had that really nasty ankle injury. Patrick Hampshire was only coming back from injury, and there was a couple of others as well. So key men for Throne would have been really chasing their tails to try and get ready for what is going to be a mammoth first-round clash. Throne's playing Donegal in Ballybofey. Now, if it is a straight knockout, as your suggestion, that is going to be massive. The tension, them two teams don't like each other. They're probably the two top Ulster teams at the minute. it would be absolutely massive. My own gut feeling, to be honest, is I think the GAA is going to work it, that it's not going to be far off a full normal championship. I think they'll definitely work out some sort of backdoor system in it. It'll be interesting to see when them proposals do come out, but certainly the way things are going, I think the GAA will be pushing for as much football as they can out of the county season and extending it into next year if necessary, which John Horan has already sort of alluded to. But from a Tyrone point of view, they are going to be in much better shape in October or November, early November, to take on Donegal than they would have been in May, because of the return of key players and the allowance of time for them players to get up to full pace.
I'm just thinking, just before we finish, lads, those great matches between Armagh and Tyrone, 03, I was at it. I was covering it for Today FM at the time. I just remember the people crying when Tyrone won their maiden All-Ireland. You'd done it the year before. McNulty, it was at Mount Julius, the Irish Open golf. Tiger Woods was winning the Irish Open. Not the Irish Open, but it was the American Express golf down in Mount Juliet that weekend, the same weekend Armagh beat Kerry. And then 05, you Peter Canavan, Oisín McConville, all these great players, Stephen McDonnell, like all these Ulster titles you won. You won every single Ulster title between 99 and 2010, 03, 05 away for Tyrone, 02 for Armagh. Did winning, being a winning person, being a player that's gone to the height of Gaelic games in your county, being an All-Ireland champion, does it change you as a person?
I think it does. I remember meeting Jerry McEntee, who have huge respect for, the great Meath footballer, and now famous for being one of the best surgeons in the country. And I remember meeting Jerry McEntee asking for advice long before Armagh ever became a formidable force in Gaelic games. And Jerry said that when Meath won the All-Ireland, it changed him for life, that there was nothing he would ever take on in his life that he didn't have the belief he could go and do. And I think, yes, winning the All-Ireland does change you. It does give you more belief in yourself. It does help you become more resilient. It does help you, of course, become a better leader or team player. When you can cope with 85,000 people and go out and perform on that special Sunday, I think it gives you that character lesson that no matter what we face in our life, and of course in COVID, we're all facing huge adversity. What I really loved about those years, it helped you forge steel in your character. It helped you build that mental toughness. It helps you build those relationships with your friends that can help you through any adversity. And of course, I would include the Tyrone players, the Kerry players, the great Down players that we had tussles with down through the years. So yes, it changed our lives. I hope that it changed our lives for the better and that we became better people as a result of it. I remember recently I had a conversation with Gary Ringrose, and he said something that really struck me. He said that he wanted to learn how to become a better human being. I remember that, what a formidable thing for a young man to say. All those players and all those games, I think it helped us become better human beings.
Yeah, I'd be a big believer in any sort of sport, how it can improve you as a person or force you to improve as a person. And I think when you get up to the higher level, that's under the microscope even more. The problem is any of them teams that have reached the top, they're all a bunch of individuals at heart, and they come together as a team. Each of them individuals will have been as a top level player coming up through your club and making it onto the county. You'll have had really big disappointments, and as you play on a bigger stage, they are even more public disappointments, and that creates real dark places for that player to have to come through and respond to. Equally, you will get huge highs, you'll get huge publicity, you'll get the slaps in the back from the big days. And if you get carried away, you will very quickly learn the problems with getting carried away with success. So you learn to be able to deal with the great highs, enjoy them, but you have to keep the feet on the ground, and you learn how to deal with the disappointments. And if them two things at that sort of level doesn't improve you as a person, then I don't know what will. But when you look at them qualities, you just think of that current Dublin team and what they have done, like personality wise. I think that's the thing people keep forgetting about, even those people that criticise and have taken my shots at them in terms of the advantages they innately have as part of being Dublin, to push them on for them All-Irelands. But on a personality wise, them individual players, any that I've met, they are made of the right stuff. And elite sport really does force them personalities to come to the top and develop even further. So certainly being part of a county team, pushing yourself to that level, I think there's only benefits can come of it.
I feel like we've only scratched the surface, Enda McGinley and Enda McNulty, but I want to thank you so much for being great sports to share your time with us today and Off the Ball Saturday on the panel about Armagh, Tyrone and GAA life. Thanks so much, guys.
Pleasure. Thanks for having us, John.
Thanks, John.
Enda McNulty and Enda McGinley there on the panel. 53106 for your text. Back after this.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.